The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast on Monday, the 16th of March, 2020. On the podcast today, I have Michael Williams, Chief Executive Officer of British Honey Company. That's BHC. And Michael talks about the business and its strategy on its first day of dealings on the Next Exchange. Also on the podcast, Paul Hill, full-time investor and analyst, gives his view on the market and what he's been buying and selling. Plus, we also mention the following companies: Lloyds, Inspiration Healthcare Group, that's IHC, and Tristel, TSTL. Plus, Alan Green, CEO of Brand Communications, talks about Tiziana Life Sciences, Destiny Pharma, Open Orphan, and Cadence Minerals. Plus, as always, I have two lists for you: the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most liked RNSs too. By the way, you can see both these lists, in fact, top 10 versions of both these lists, at voxmarkets.co.uk.
Vox Markets is an online community of investors that runs a free mobile and desktop platform that allows you to track news and updates about any UK-listed company, offering RNS push notifications, detailed charts, pricing data, and much more. Find out more at voxmarkets.co.uk/app.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Michael Williams, Chief Executive Officer of British Honey Company, BHC. Michael, thanks for joining me.
Good morning.
Now, you've listed on Next Exchange today. It's quite a hairy day to list, but congratulations. And before we talk about company-specific news and what's to come, just give us a brief summary. What is British Honey Company all about, please?
British Honey started off as a honey producer. We were one of the biggest producers of British honey. We only sell British honey, no foreign honey. Soon discovered that there was not an adequate supply to build a sustainable business. And we developed honey product with gin added. So we now have a honey gin, and we now have a family of products in the alcohol marketplace which have honey added.
I see. And so all your products now are sort of alcohol drinks with infused honey in different flavours, are they?
Our Keeper's range, mm-hmm. But since we've acquired the assets of London Distillery, we now have another range of products which don't have honey added, and we'll continue to develop that. And they've already got existing customers who are not expecting the product to be delivered with honey. So the Dodds Gin brand, we would be building on that as a non-alcoholic brand.
Yeah, yeah. And at the moment, how do you get this product to market? Are you in supermarkets? Is it just online? Or what is the score?
Okay. So we supply across the marketplace. So we supply to Mid-Counties Co-op. So that's a supermarket. We supply to them. We supply them honey, and we supply them alcohol products. We supply online. Now, online is becoming important. Back at our distillery, the first thing we built was a computer-controlled distillery. So we have a plant that's capable of producing 1.5 million bottles a year. We only use about 10% of capacity at the moment. Mm-hmm. So we've got an infrastructure that allows us to grow. Behind that is a sophisticated computer system. We've spent probably £250,000 developing that software. It's unique to us. We have two software developers on staff. That software can now talk to Ocado, Amazon, and online companies so that we can now take orders in and package and send out without any human intervention. We also supply Not on the High Street, the same method. Customer goes to Not on the High Street, orders it, customizes the label. The order comes through our system, and it gets shipped by us to the customer with no other intervention.
Yeah.
The base of our business is the ability of the paperless computer system we have. So that's the essence of the business. Then on top of that, we've put in the proper infrastructure. We have a £1 million investment in our distillery. This is a very sophisticated still we have and production lines. And then we have Salsa. So we manufacture under food standards. So both our honey and our gin is produced under the Salsa standard, which again, very few companies have at our size.
Yeah.
Now, the marketplace, because of the virus, we must talk about that, is about to switch. So today, we see that the government is talking about closing pubs, closing restaurants, closing hotel bars. That is going to cause a consumer switch, because the distributors who are sending out product there, they won't need to, because there's going to be a hiccup in the marketplace. So we foresee a switch to online sales. The consumer isn't about to stop drinking. I think the consumer is now going to change the drinking habit to consuming at home. So we expect online sales to go up as a result of the business catastrophe that's enveloping the world at the present time.
Yeah, absolutely. And so your strategy is what, organic, or you're acquiring? What's happening there?
Our strategy is to build our Capers brand, build our Dodds brand, and we have another brand called 1606. We will be opening, hopefully later, been put off for this year, a plant to bottle in China with our Chinese partners. So we will be sending IBCs of our product to China to be bottled there. We will also, or we have started already, to ship our product in IBCs to America. So an IBC is leaving this week for America with London Dry Gin in it, which will be bottled at our partner distillery in Florida. Our Florida distillery sends to us bourbon and rum, and we are now, if you like, Europeanizing that for the British taste, so that we've now got bourbon in barrels with us. We have rum, which we're aging, and then later in the year we'll be releasing a rum and a bourbon, which will suit the palate of the British consumer. So we're already bringing products across the Atlantic and across to China and the Eastern marketplace for bottling on site. If you just think about Coca-Cola, Coca-Cola does not ship bottles around the world. It ships essence. So we'll be shipping essence. So if you look at our London Dry Gin, one IBC, when it arrives in America, will produce 66,000 bottles. So shipping in an IBC makes a lot of sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And take us through some of the board there, directors there. What's their stories?
Right. So we have a large board of directors, a sophisticated board of directors. So Sir Hugo Swire is our chairman. He's brought with him a lot of knowledge, a lot of contacts, and is active in the business as a non-executive director. Robert Porter Smith, he built up a company which manufactured food bars, which he sold very successfully for £60 million 5 years ago. He's joined us because of his retail experience, and he works actively with me. Martin Riley has just joined us as we floated. He was with the Pernod Ricard group for most of his career. He retired in 2015, and obviously he brings us a lot of industry experience. Philip Sears brings us city experience. He's well known in the city and brings along that extra corporate governance expertise that public companies require. Wafik Syed, well-known philanthropist, set up the Syed Business School in Oxford. He's very kindly allowed us to put 175 beehives on his estate in Oxfordshire, and he continues to support us both financially. He's a he has a 29.5% interest in the company, and his organisation supports us, and we are producing a Tusmore whiskey from barley that's grown on the estate. And our last director, but very important, is Sophie. She represents our Chinese investors. 15% of the company is invested by Chinese investors. And she brings with her the link to China and our ability to perform in China with people already on the ground and who are experienced in the Chinese marketplace.
Excellent stuff. Well, it sounds like a stellar board there. Okay, Michael, well, final thing. For people listening right now, Alex, the sound of what you're talking about, the progress you're making, but are not yet following the story, give them three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page on Vox Markets and add you to their watch list, please.
Our product, produced by Master Distiller, first year, won 12 awards. And nimble in the marketplace with the product. The board, skilled, well invested by the board. The board have several million pounds invested. In this last round, they invested over £2 million. A good, solid board. And the marketplace is shifting. It's going to shift during the virus, and we're ready for it. And we're already making adaptions to our products, to the way we deliver, to meet the demand as we see the world moving into a new phase whilst it copes with what is effectively an international business disaster.
Excellent stuff. Michael, good to chat to you, and hopefully we'll catch up in the not-too-distant future. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now, back by popular demand, it's Paul Hill, analyst and full-time investor. You all right, fella?
Yeah, well, just about, yeah. Thanks, Justin.
Well, do you know what? You just made the remark there, said how it's changed since the last time we spoke. We spoke about a month ago, and literally, you know, the market's just fallen off a cliff. And not just, you know, and it hasn't stopped. It's continuing to fall. The velocity is quite scary, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely terrifying. I mean, as I say, I think we only spoke about, what, 3 weeks ago, and the FTSE was 7,500. It's now touching sort of 5,000. So it's dropped sort of a third in that period. And not only has that sort of like sharp move scared investors on the sentiment wise, but it's also actually fundamentally changed the economics of the world. So, yeah. Oh, yeah, I mean, you wouldn't believe how chalk and cheese it's been over the last 3 weeks.
Let me ask you from your perspective, because I think nothing, you know, action speaks louder than words. I mean, last time you were on, you had about 40% cash. Is it around about the same? Have you tried to buy some of these dips? Have you seen some bargains out there? What have you been doing, or just sitting tight?
Good question. I mean, essentially, you know, as I say, I'm a long-term investor, and I tend to look at sort of like, you know, 3 to 5 year time horizons when I go into shares. The last time I spoke, I was sort of like on a positive, sort of a more aggressive tilt. I had some cash to deploy, and as you say, I had about 60-40. I hadn't actually sold any shares other than actually this morning, and I'll go through what I've done this morning so far. But my weighting had actually gone 40-60, not because I'd sold any, just because my cash had stayed the same, just because my stock have gone down so much. And I mean, like everybody else, it's just been absolute sort of like the sea of red across my screen. I mean, it's just, I'm less concerned on sentiment. I look at sentiment as opportunity and volatility as opportunity. But in this environment, what's actually happened, it's been so cataclysmic that actually the fundamentals behind most of the economy and certainly a lot of sectors and industries have just been turned up on its head in the last 3 weeks. And therefore, I have actually been, I mean, this morning, for instance, I mean, after we spoke, I bought some Lloyd's shares under tangible net book value, thinking they're a sort of like a widow's and orphan stock that I could just sit on, take a dividend, and it would stay just replacing what I had in cash. God, I got that wrong. I mean, I bought it at about 48p, and I think they're trading at about 33. And I basically said, these are not a steady Eddie shares that I liked. And if you look at the straight balance sheet on Lloyds, you look at it and you say, well, actually, they're pretty good because most of it's a mortgage book and the loan to value ratios are really low. This consumer has been doing okay. However, what you also need to look at, it's got another side of the coin, is that its insurance book is getting absolutely mullered because the spreads on its corporate debt are going through the roof compared to gilt. So that's going to knock a shed load off its net book value. And also, the corporate loans it's done to who I'm not 100% sure which sectors. I mean, they do give a split, but they don't say which companies. They are could be fundamentally, you know, sort of like challenged going forward because you've got retail, obviously, really suffering, airlines, you've got cruise ships, you've got, you know, shops, you've got all kinds of people. And so if you're going to be a lender, this really is sort of like, it's not a steady Eddie. I mean, I bought it on one thing and it's actually turned into another. I got it wrong and, you know, it's a mea culpa, really. I mean, as I say, I remember when we chatted, you were more, you know, cautious than I was on coronavirus. And I was saying, well, this is going to be sort of like hopefully a 3-month thing, a bit like SARS and avian flu and MERS. And it's going to be sort of contained in Asia Pac and China. And we'll get through it, you know, in a fairly sort of like Q1, Q2 effect. Flipping hell, I couldn't believe how wrong I was on that one. I mean, now it's just lockdown everywhere. And say the key trigger point, in my view, it hasn't been said publicly, but the key trigger point for me that why governments are taking such a heavy-handed approach is that they're simply, their health services are being overwhelmed, both on the staff, systems, and, you know, number of beds. And once that happens, it puts all existing patients at risk, and you can't have that. So that's why, you know, you've got North America, you've got Europe, you've got, I mean, crikey, the list goes on, and it's... I've solved Lloyds today, not because of sentiment, which is awful, purely on fundamentals. And I think a lot of other fundamentals investors are also thinking, actually, you've got to change your investment strategy if the fundamentals change and the facts change.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you know what? On the weekend, I was saying that to somebody, and I said, you've always got to change. I mean, I'm changing all the time. I mean, it's not changing. It's like someone said, oh, you like this stock then? I said, listen, stocks change all the time. If a company misses something or the background changes, anything, you've got to be prepared to change. If you don't change, if you stick, and I got into a bit of an argument with someone who's religious. I didn't mean to have a go at the religion, but what I said is you can't just have blind faith in a company, especially small cap stocks. You've got to look at the updates all the time and adjust your thinking as it goes because it changes. A company could look brilliant, you know, 6 months ago, and now, like Lloyds, you say, in a couple of weeks, it changes, you know, fast. You know?
Absolutely, and we're talking of like a £45 billion business. I mean, we're not just talking of mum and pop down the road. This is an absolute giant that's been around for flipping like decades. Mm. But yeah, the fundamentals have changed, and I'm with you. It's a very dynamic environment, and it's just incredible how it's just upturned over such a short period. Mm-hmm. And I hope we're all going to get through it. And I will change again, more positively, if we get a medical solution. And there is some actual potential good news there because at the beginning of April, Gilead Sciences are going to put out phase 3 results for its antiviral drug that treats coronavirus. It's already gone through phase 1 and phase 2. It's safe. It's got very positive news or so far in terms of treatment. It's actually going through 2 phase trials in China and 2 phase trials in Asia. And if that actually is proved to slow down or work against the coronavirus, then that's a game changer. I mean, that will absolutely, you know, change people's perspective and the fundamentals because it will become a very short term. But if it doesn't, if we as a human race, if we fail to find a medical solution soon to it, or the dry hot weather fails to slow the progress of coronavirus, you could actually see lots and lots of industries go bust. And this is the big difference between the financial crisis. Governments and central banks are out of bullets. They cannot bail out all these industries. The US did it with the auto boys out in the States and the banks. We did it with the banks, and we are maxed out. So in that case, what is going to happen? Well, you hope you hope that actually, you know, there's going to be some sugar daddy out there who's going to buy these companies for, you know, for diddly squat, but actually stand by their debtors. If they don't, and some of these big boys go into insolvency, there will be a chain reaction across, yeah. Which there was in the banks financial crisis. You remember when Lehman's went bust in? It's a horrible thought.
I know, but do you know what? Oddly, last time I was more bearish, and you know, not so much. But now, I'm worried about small business and not being able to have any customers for 1 to 3 months. You know, when many of them need, wouldn't survive for a week without any revenue. That's why I'm sort of worried, that domino effect. But what I think is going to happen, we're going to get daily updates now from the government. They've got to step in here. And they've got a financial plan as well as a health plan.
With what?
Well, no, they'll just say, right, from now on, the banks, we bailed you out in 2008. Right now, you're calling up no debt. Any business that can't work, they don't have to pay you for 3 months, whatever it is. There's going to be a break in all bills, all mortgages, everything.
Let's just stress test that one, Justin, okay?
Yeah.
So a bank
Go through.
No. A bank is told, yeah, to stand by everybody who owes its money and put them on an interest holiday, yeah?
Yeah.
What if the bank goes bust because of it?
Why would the bank go bust? I mean, I'm not talking about all industries. I'm talking about people who, you know, small, medium-sized businesses who literally have to take a break. They're talking about a payment break for a while. You know, I mean, there are still industries. The thing is now, I partly think, I've listened to the government's, you know, sort of herd sort of policy, and I think it's right. I think generally, you know, if you're under 70 pretty much and you're healthy, it doesn't affect you. We shouldn't be panicking about this at all. It's literally, we've got to protect our health service and our older people, understand. But we should try and carry on as normal as we can, because the economy will crash. That's it. And so, you know, and that's not good for anyone.
Yeah, I mean, the observation that you made in terms of, you know, going out for meals and seeing empty restaurants and you're worried about small businesses and stuff is something every single retail investor can do now and work out what it means for their portfolio. Because I am absolutely with you. I typically go for a walk before I start having a look at all the news wires at 7 o'clock, yeah? And on my road, there's a train station about, I don't know, 200 yards down the road. Mm-hmm. And it's normally, the road is packed with cars, people, commuters going into the centre of Birmingham, and it's a hubbub of activity, yeah? There was one parked car, nobody was on the platforms. It just shows you that activity levels for small businesses and for anybody who's running their own operation is really going to be tight. And if you're right that the banks will stand by the small businesses and can do it, then that works. For how long, I don't know.
But what's the alternative? The alternative is that, you know, they'll have so many defaults. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, I know it is. But the point is, it isn't just... Let's be clear about this, yeah? The government own RBS. They don't own any other bank, yeah? They can actually backstop the big, you know, high street lenders. But that isn't... That is not. That's just the tip of the iceberg. Just think of all the credit card boys. Just think of all the, you've also got the shadow banking. You've got all the other lenders. You've got the finance houses who also owe money. Are you going to tell the whole? Do you know how much money we've? Do you know how much corporate debt there is in the world?
America's got about $23 trillion on its own.
Yeah,
isn't it?
Exactly.
That's government debt, not corporate debt.
No. I mean, in America, it's about $13-14 trillion dollars of debt. Okay, the size of the UK economy is only $3 trillion.
Yeah,
I mean, it's sort of like, yes, there's a berserk. We all hope.
Well, they just write it off in the end. Just all of it. Just all government debt. Just write it off.
Yeah. And then effectively you get effectively hyperinflation against assets, don't you? Mm. You get that nuclear option, which may well be the only thing. So the thing, as I say, coming back to where we started.
I think it'll be fine in 3 months.
Yes, I would love to say that. Absolutely.
I think minimum 3 months, 6 months, we'll have a heck of a rally out of this. The way we're talking now, this is ultimate fear, ultimate panic, you know? And like I said, financial crisis, this is a demand-led, pretty much. We're having to shut down businesses, demand-led. Before there was financial crisis, that was, you know, everything that the markets were based on was grinding to a halt, and so they had to be freed up. And so that was more worrying. This is very worrying as well, but we are sort of super overreacting reacting now to something and shutting all businesses down. So we can stop this if we want. I mean, China shut them. We can let the virus you know, flourish a bit. It doesn't matter. It's as long as you protect the NHS and then older people, you know, it's fine. But I mean, but you can't shut the entire economy down.
Hey, because, I'm with you. I mean, is the pain worse than the disease? I mean, that's the thing.
I bought something today. Anyway, I bought two things today. Right? I mean, yeah. Silver went nuts. It's gone oversold. And if you look back in the financial crisis, it went gold and silver started going down in 2008. So it went from 1,000. I mean, gold went from $1,000 down to about $700.
And then it
shot back up once I started QEing. I've also bought, in fact, I started researching it after one of your tweets, actually, Tristel. I bought Tristel.
So I
read about their, I looked at the chart first of all. I looked at the chart. It's like no crash has happened. And then I started reading their update, their last interims. Very bullish, very growing anyway before COVID came along. They mentioned COVID in there, saying we're starting to have to see this. Obviously, the CEO's statement is after the financial results. But he was starting to talk about COVID. And I'm thinking, listen, their main customers are hospitals. They're for people don't know about it, decontamination, infection control. But their main, you know, customers are hospitals. So that demand is not going to go away now. It's raised awareness. This virus will raise so much awareness. Their demand is going to go up, if anything, you know. So they're a good company anyway. Before that,
they're
highly valued. I understand that, but do you know what? They're going to grow, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, I'm with you. You can put your money in a lot worse places than that. I can tell you. And certainly, if you want to hide out, then that's a good place to be.
Ex-dividend date's 26th of this month, by the way. And I'm just thinking, you know what? I'm happy to scale in there because I just think their next update will be a lot better than the last one. The last one was quite good. You know, very good. Actually.
Oh yeah. I mean, they basically do the it's a chlorine dioxide decontaminants for small medical instruments that are used for localized procedures, so for things like your nose, ears and eyes and, you know, endoscopies and all that kind of stuff. It's a wipe system that kills all known germs dead, so to speak, including coronavirus, and it's fast and easy and it's simple for people to use, so it ticks every single box and it's high margin. So yeah, I mean, you can go. I mean, I haven't got any shares, but I wish I did, mate.
Well, do you know what? I just bought some this morning. They may come back a little bit, I don't know, but it's hard to buy them this morning. Couldn't buy a lot of them, and I just looked. You know, I wrote up a little piece on just on Google Docs over the weekend, and I got spreadsheets and from last interims, this interims, revenue growth 20%, profit growth 20%, operating cash flow growth 21%, you know, net asset growth 37%, net asset growth 40%. I mean, everything's up. All margins. They're very healthy as well. Healthy, good efficiency, like you say, good margins. It's all decent. And I thought, you know what? And that was, they only just touched on COVID-19 because, and this time around, wow, this is going to really raise the. And they did mention, in fact, he said, let me just scroll down the CEO. He said, so this is Paul Sweeney. Yeah, he said, we are currently experiencing COVID-19. This viral outbreak, together with ever-present threat of antimicrobial resistance, will be a powerful influence on global healthcare systems for greater investment in infection prevention and control. Exactly. And I thought, do you know what? Yeah. It's not going away. If you go on Wikipedia, have a look at what. I was surprised how often viruses come along. Go on Wikipedia, the list of viruses. They come every year, pretty much. Not as big as this, of course. This is once in a decade kind of thing. But they come around every year.
Oh, yeah, they do, yeah. Yeah, I agree. Yeah, like it's like a bit like buses, isn't it? Yeah. The only one thing I would just say, long term, medium term picture is really strong. The very near term, it might mean that a lot of outpatient procedures, which is what they treat, get pushed sidewards for freeing up beds for COVID-19. I mean, who knows, but you could find sort of like elective procedures get pushed to the right rather than actually, you know, because they need them for other things. But the long-term picture is absolutely, you know, really, really strong.
Well, definitely. Thank you for that one, because I saw it on your timeline, and I had it on my watch list. I got the RNS. I didn't read the RNS for interims, and I saw you tweet something out on there. I did some research on it for a little bit, and And I forgot about it, and then I went back to it two days ago, and I thought, "Oh, hang on, this is looking quite nice." I mean, I just want a stock that's not going down, you know.
Oh yeah. Well, I mean, another one going up, which is actually a beneficiary, is Inspiration Healthcare, which does neonatal ICU bins, effectively capsules for babies, but they also have had a massive record contract from the NHS to build or to make ventilators for adults, about 1.25 mil. And, you know, they're right in the right space as well. And the good management teams, I haven't got any shares in them. You know, I've got no sort of axe to grind either way. The shares have rocketed today about 20%. So that's another one, another good. I mean, if I was, the two things I would say about my portfolio and about, which I think applies to every single investor, okay, fundamentally, have a good trawl through your portfolio and stocks at some point when you're calm and just see how you think fundamentally those businesses are going to be in a first, a horrible scenario, i.e. economy is locked down, then in a scenario whereby after a month or 2 months we get good news, which is what we all really hope, and it moves forward, okay? And then just weigh up what you, what that person thinks and what probability is going to happen. And in either scenario, and this is an absolutely critical position, in either scenario, you've got to be able to walk away. You've got to be able to position such that you're going to survive, you're going to get through it. And that's the critical. You don't want to bet the farm on something that if it goes the wrong way, is going to cause you a problem. So that's what I would say. And then the other overlay, which you have just proved, you know, from what you've just said with TriStar or your purchase, look for companies that actually, I mean, you know, in healthcare or whatever, that have come off, have been thrown out with, you know, the bathwater sort of stuff. Good businesses generating cash, good growth, fundamentals, and they're going to do well long term. And those real premium quality stocks are probably what you want in the short term. I haven't got enough of them, basically. I could do with a few of those, and that's certainly on my radar list. But at the moment, big picture wise, as I say, I was 60-40 stocks cash. I'm now 40-60 stocks cash, not because I've sold any, other than obviously Lloyds this morning, but this was before Lloyds, just because my equity has come down so much. Yeah. I am sitting on my other stocks. And you know, we'll look for buying opportunities further down the road. But I am absolutely not. I'm trying to avoid the urge to buy new positions unless I really think they're really, really good. Because I just don't know which way it's going to go at the moment. I really don't.
No, and that's right. And that's why the sell-off is happening. You know, people, we often, let's be honest, the financial crisis, there was that worrying feeling that we're never going to get out of this. You know, this is never going to happen. And everything's crashing. But I think, you know, again, central banks have to step in and do something. They have to do something here, and it will happen because they can't just let the system crash. And so something, and like I said, and you know, sometimes, like, not going crazy, like you say. At the moment, my maximum exposure is 2.5% in any one stock, maximum. Yeah. Most of them are below 1% at the moment, and I own about I own 20 stocks. Yeah. And these are companies I you know, like I said, there's always more time to scale in. Always, there's stocks like we said, you know, we would like to have bought, you know, a month or 2 months back, they were overpriced a little bit. And we always think, oh, we're never going to get it. They're too expensive now. And look where they are now. It's like they are bargains, but now we're too scared to buy them, you know?
Well, but that's the thing, you see. Mm. It isn't just... Most people have sort of pigeonholed in this as being a fear capitulation, you know, crash, yeah? And there is masses of capitulation, masses of fear. Don't get me wrong, yeah? There's also fundamentals. Do not think this is going down solely because of sentiment. It's going down because... whole industries could go bust. And if they go bust with lots and lots of debt, there will be a chain reaction throughout the whole of the, you know, economy and through the banking sector. And we're not talking, you know, peanuts here, we're talking big beer. So we don't, nobody wants that. The banks don't want that. The countries don't want that. However, I would say, and I'd reiterate again, is that most central banks and governments have blown out their bullets. There isn't that much wiggle room at the moment. There was the financial crisis. Just give you an indication, the UK government debt on its balance sheet at the time of the last financial crisis in 2006, roughly around about 35-40%. We're currently hitting about 80 or 90%, depending on how you want to measure it. Europe is at about 80 or 90% as well. The States is actually at 100%. If this went really horribly wrong, and as you say, the government had to step in with fiscal and had to bail out companies and take them onto the balance sheet, if you get above like 150 to 200, you know, that's sort of like 150% of GDP, that is unsustainable. And the only way around it is effectively print masses and masses and masses and masses and masses and masses, you know, money. And if that's the case, then, you know, you do want to be in assets, no doubt about it. But there's going to be a huge whoosh down and then a massive, as you rightly say, up correction going forward. But that is so difficult to time, so difficult to get right.
Yeah, absolutely. Marvellous stuff. Well, listen, Paul, next time we chat, we'll probably be a lot more bullish. Like the market's right, buy now, buy.
Yeah, hey, I'll tell you, if Gilead have come out with their successful phase three trials, that will just change everybody's sentiment, mine certainly, on a fundamentals basis. And there is a good chance that that could happen. So ending on a positive note, we're nowhere near Armageddon in terms of, you know, now. But if we can't find a medical solution and it gets worse from here in terms of, you know, the economic effects, then, hey.
I also think what would be kind of bullish or a positive bit of news is if we start seeing Italy and Spain's numbers coming down. I think that will help a lot. You know, just say, okay, we understand how long it's going to last for over here, maybe. At least we can see a window out there. You know, if it carries on going up, that's going to worry everyone. But if we plateau now and start coming down, that's, at least say, okay, we know what's ahead of us pretty much, you know?
Exactly, yeah. Mm. All right.
Marvellous, Paul. Chat soon, fella.
Thanks, Justin. Cheers. Bye.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Alan Green, CEO of Brand Communications. You're Al.
Good morning, Jess. Yes, it's a nice sunny day, and that's about all we can say, really, because the rest of it's a frigging bloodbath, isn't it? I mean, it's just unbelievable.
Yeah. Well, do you know what? Yeah, exactly. It's like the markets are just burning up. I got to laugh. Last night, the Fed stepped in. And then and brought is you know interest rates down to zero, $700 billion worth of QE, and they thought that would help before the markets opened. It's made it worse. It's chucked fire on the bonfire. People were worried anyway. Now if the Fed are this worried, wow,
yeah, if the Fed are this worried, get out. Well, that's the thing. I mean, Trump tweets on Friday, the Dow's up nearly 2,000 points, biggest ever rise in one day, and now it's the futures are pegging it down. I think 1,050 points might be higher now. I don't know, but yeah, I mean it has. Well, to be honest, I think anything that any government does now, it's people are reading the possible negative connotation into it, and traders and markets are just reacting, and we're in a bear market, and that's what happens. So, you know, good news is the negative points of the bad news are sort of used and acted on, and people continue to sell. So I mean, goodness me, the FTSE died below 5,000 today, 4,900, bounced off that, but it's odd, you know, when all this started, I just had a little voice in the back of my head said, we're going to go down to 4,500. And I think it's going to happen. I think we could even go further than that, given where we are. But I think the main thing is, we have to remember that as investors, there are some great opportunities emerging. If you're looking longer term, if you're looking at income, if you're looking looking to build a portfolio for the future, then there are some great opportunities emerging now. It's scary to invest now because of the movement in the market, but there are some great opportunities both for income and also if you're not confident enough to buy the stocks individually, there are also some terrific funds out there as well, which offer great value because they have also fallen in line with the market. Not as dramatically, I might add, but they have fallen.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, I genuinely think this could be... I mean, in 2008, it was a different thing because the banks were... You know, there's a chance the banks weren't going to be able to operate. And so the financial system on which the markets, you know, relied was grinding to a halt, and it was almost, you know, freezing up. It was like a car engine without oil. And obviously the people, the Fed stepped in, central banks stepped in. But this is also, you know, very scary because it's something the Fed can't really help with. And central bank, I suppose they can if they give interest-free loans to small businesses and say, stop all loans. If you have to pay it, you know, we now should have 3 months. If you can't operate your business because of coronavirus, because you have to shut it down, it's not your fault, of course not, but you shouldn't have to pay any liabilities. You know, you shouldn't have to pay your mortgage, your rent, anything like that. That's all frozen, and you can have a 3-month interest-free loan from the government. That's what has to happen because what the Fed did last night, that doesn't help demand. People are not going to go out and buy stuff from restaurants and bars and all that stuff. I went to a restaurant yesterday, and it was a friend's restaurant, and it's a very busy place. It's a lovely eatery, and yesterday there was like a couple of tables full, that's all. And it's like, we haven't even started it yet. So we are going to show, I mean, even if you look at the stats, on bear market, I've got a spreadsheet right in front of me, from peak to trough, right, the lowest or the shortest period of time was 67 days. We're only about 25 days in. Even going that, and that's the lowest amount. The average is 335 days. So we're talking about a year, pretty much. It may bottom out. And of course, it doesn't go all the way down in that time, but it may start bottoming out, and you don't know what the bottom is until it starts going back up, of course. But, I mean, so people who say, oh, it's overdone, we're going to be around here for a long time. And coronavirus is, I think, minimum, on a good day, on an optimistic outbreak, it's about 3 months, probably. And I think, and then we'll probably start seeing something. But I think, plan for 3 months. And there's not many businesses, small businesses, that can go with no revenue for 1 month, let alone 3 months. It's amazing how many people go from month to month on paychecks. They haven't got any savings. A lot of people, so it's going to affect everyone. So the government are going to have to do something. There are these daily meetings coming up right now. I hope they come up with a financial strategy as well as a health strategy, because the country needs it, definitely. Well,
you're absolutely right. They're going to have to. I mean, a lot of small businesses, as you rightly say, the people are, it's a hand-to-mouth existence, and they are relying on the market that they sell to staying level and staying stable. And as we saw with Flybe, just one change, and Flybe immediately went to the wall. And there are other companies like that. I mean, EasyJet are saying that they may have to ground their planes for a month. Now, the share price of EasyJet was 15 quid, six, 7 months ago. It dipped down to £5.50 in early trading this morning. It's bounced back up to £6.50 now. So if you're a trader, and if you've got the cash and the balls, frankly, to get in there and trade now, you can make, there are some fantastic money making opportunities. But the prognosis is really serious. Look what's happening in Spain. A friend of mine just got back from Spain, and now the country's in lockdown. Madrid's in turmoil. The police are deploying drones, so if you're in the street, you can get fined and sent home. I mean, these are draconian measures, and I don't think we're too many weeks away from seeing a similar scenario.
I think this week, end of this week, will be lockdown.
Yeah, yeah.
Probably, because everyone's saying we've got to go in lockdown. And people are starting to panic as well already. So I think we've got to start doing it now. And I understand what the government are doing, trying to... you can't lock everyone down for too long. So they're saying, wait until it starts to get a problem, then we go into lockdown. Yeah. Anyway, let's talk some individual stocks, if it's worth doing, Al.
well, firstly, are there any toilet roll manufacturers that we can invest into?
Yeah, but you know, I mean, a lot of people say supermarkets can do very well, and I think they are for, say, one or two quarters, because a lot of stuff, we've overbought stuff, my wife has, and we're not going we're not going to use twice the amount of toilet roll. So we're gonna, once this coronavirus slows down, we will go through the stuff we have in the house. So you may see a boost for the Q1, Q2 figures, but that'll drop back off, I assume, because you're not going to double eat, are you, food? You're going to just have the food there in the freezer or in the cupboard. So it'll be a good Q1, Q2 maybe, but after that, it'll just drop off, I think, because it's maybe a good trading position, but not investing. It's going to go up and down, isn't it, really?
It is. It is. Yeah, that's the thing. The supermarkets, online delivery services, they're all going to benefit from this period. Also, I think telecoms too, because during this period, we're going to be more reliant than ever on communication. So I think people will be using online conferencing. They'll be on the phones more. So arguably, something like Vodafone, which I think dipped below 95p this morning, which is quite astonishing. That could also offer a great opportunity too. But again, because we don't know when this is going to end, and it's likely, I think, some reports have been saying this morning, that this could spin out into spring next year. We could be isolated and living on our Todd for a very long time. So
I've seen CNBC, they're talking about Zoom. We heard of Zoom. It's like Skype, but a lot of people say it's better than Skype, but it's listed in the New York Stock Exchange or Nasdaq. But
Zoom is great. We do Zoom meetings all the time. Terrific. Really good platform.
Cool. All right, what stocks are you looking at?
Okay, well, the pharma industry has been relatively it's offered great defensive qualities during this during the coronavirus crisis, and we've seen a number of companies move sharply with their share prices as they develop, and obviously, you know, the holy grail though is finding a cure for coronavirus. Last week, a company that's dual listed in the US on NASDAQ and the UK on AIM, Tiziana Life Sciences, TILS is the AIM EPIC code. I'll insert a caveat here before I start talking about it. The company did say that it was going to plan to delist from AIM during quarter two this year. So whether it does or doesn't, it may, in light of developments I'm going to discuss now, that may well change. But nonetheless, I want to insert that in now. So the company currently is worth, it's currently got a market cap of some 60 million, trading at 45p a share. Initially, the company was known for developing what they called fully human molecular treatments for various conditions, primarily chronic conditions such as Crohn's disease, NASH, non-alcoholic steatohepatitis, IBS, and also treatments for liver cancer. These are called Mishaclib and Frolumab. But the company announced last week that one particular development that it had been working on, TZLS501, could be a potential treatment for patients infected with coronavirus who are at risk of respiratory failure. And let's not forget, with what we know about coronavirus now, is that it affects people with respiratory conditions and also the older generation, primarily because there's a chemical called IL-6, and if the body starts to produce that, which chronic coronavirus does, it basically damages the lungs and leads to respiratory failure and subsequently death. TZLS501 has been tested and is shown that the treatment rapidly depletes circulating levels of IL-6 in the blood. So therefore, it could potentially be a treatment for the most chronic cases of coronavirus and obviously alleviating respiratory failure. Now, this was announced middle of last week. The share price rocketed from 32p up to as high as £1.70, came back down again, and is currently trading, as I say, around 49p. The company also raised $10 million the following day in US ADSs. Those are shares for companies, of course, based on foreign companies based or trading on the US exchange. So it's now fully funded to complete this development and obviously develop this treatment. To invest in it now, clearly, if the company is going to delist, then the shares will of course only be available on NASDAQ or to be traded via sort of spread trading platforms or possibly even CFD. But nonetheless, I think, you know, this treatment actually goes right to the heart of the issue with coronavirus, there is some risk associated with it, but it's a very exciting the stock is at a very exciting juncture at this current moment in time.
Mm-hmm. What is that? It's TILS, is it? Is it
TILS is the epic code. Yeah, if you look at the chart, you'll see it
went mad, didn't it, the other day?
Sorry?
It went mad the other day, didn't it?
Absolutely crazy. Yeah, I mean, literally the day it was announced, the shares rocketed in the morning and
they came back down. Yeah. Okay, they came back down. So they're at 35 pence. They went up to like one. Where did they go to? Let me just pull the chart down there. With 35 pence, then they went to 172, and now they're back to 37 pence. Okay, so they're back down there. Okay.
Yeah, that's it.
All right, what's next, Al?
Okay, so staying with pharma companies and so on, I wanted to talk about a company we've spoken about in the past, Destiny Pharma. Now, Destiny Pharma have developed.
Is it Destiny's Child offshoot? Yeah.
That's right. Beyonce is a big sponsor of the company, but no, she's not. I tell a lie. No, this company is based down at the Sussex Innovation Centre, and obviously Brand Communications based there for many years, so we know the guys there. But they've developed developed the excess of drugs, antibacterial drugs, to combat superbugs such as MRSA. And clearly, given that the hospitals, the NHS hospitals all over the world, will be literally at breaking point. There's never been a more important time for something that can battle MRSA. And it's been slow progress for Destiny's Child, or Destiny's Pharma, as it should be known as. But nonetheless, the company announced at the start of March that its phase two trial was progressing well. It had 60 patients enrolled. It's also well funded too, $7.5 million cash at the bank, so it's fully funded through to the through the first half of next year. And also its grant-funded programs are progressing too. And as we said before, Justin, you know, these pharmaceutical companies developing a treatment like this are sort of slow burn in many senses. But I think any treatment nowadays that's A, crucial to finding a cure for coronavirus, and B, combating superbugs such as MRSA, will be right at the top of list of priorities. So we could see companies like this receiving additional grants, additional funding, and maybe additional resources to speed the process up, although as we know, the development and from a drug to initial testing phase through to sign off and through to approval can take many, many years.
Yeah, well, do you know what? I don't know which one it was, MERS or SARS, but that still hasn't got a vaccine. You know, there was a promise at the time of fast vaccine happening, you know, speeding up development, but still. Yeah. Hasn't got a vaccine, you know, so it just shows how long these things take. And there's a high failure rate, and there's a high, it costs a lot of money, takes a lot of time, you know, like going through the clinical phase one to, I mean, I think something like, it's less than about 5% will get from preclinical to phase three and complete phase three. And even at phase three, I think it's run about sort of 40-50% rate. So even then, after years, and you know, you're talking about sort of normally, you know, a year at least for each clinical trial, and then the money in that as well, and the rate of failure. So, you know, we hear all this. I know Trump is trying to push that guy, Dr. Fauci, is saying, yeah, it'll be fast and that'll be fast. And he said, no, it can't be fast. You have to test hundreds of people. You can't get a vaccine wrong and it kill people or damage them in some way. It's got to be done properly, you know?
Yeah, that's got to be, absolutely, you're absolutely right. I agree with you. But I think in extreme circumstances, if it got out of control, then I guess there's a trade-off. If something seems to be effective, then you know, maybe if it can save some lives, then that's better than no lives.
Cool. What's next, Al? What's next?
Okay, so just on the subject of pharma companies, obviously we've spoken about Open Orphan many times, and you've had Cal Friel and Trevor Phillips on the podcast. But just some further news today and developments. Of course, the hVIVO quarantine centre in central London is all over the news. There was a massive news article last week in the Mirror and others about patients undergoing trials in there and being given a very mild dose of coronavirus. I think they're paid £4,000 a time, so they go in there, have a very mild dose of coronavirus, and they're observed and they're tested, and from that a vaccine has been developed. And of course, this is under the watchful eye of Professor John Oxford and his team. So again, the Open Orphan and as a group are at a very pivotal stage. And there was an announcement this morning. The company have announced the flu V vaccine they've been working on. The challenge study results have been featured in a peer review journal, and indeed the results are that the progress is so good, because they believe they could be on the verge of developing a universal vaccine for flu. And of course, as you know, flu is out there in many different strains, but this is almost a one size fits all vaccine, which would be a huge step forward in the battle against flu. So no matter how it mutates and develops in the future, this vaccine would deal with it, which is really quite something. So that's aside from coronavirus or anything else. So very strong progress there from Open Orphan today.
Mm-hmm. Marvellous stuff. Anything else? I've got 3 minutes.
Okay, right. Cadence Minerals. So we've spoken about Cadence before on many occasions. Several developments there that are newsworthy and worth a look at. Firstly, the flagship project, the IMAPA project in Brazil. Announcement last week, the company have offered creditors a reduced amount in the mine. Just to summarize, the IMAPA project, it was valued in 2012 at $600 million. Cadence can own, once they have an agreement with the creditors, Cadence, the $2.5 million Cadence have put into escrow will be released to pay certain creditors, and Cadence will then own 20% of Dev Minerals, I believe that's pronounced anyway.
I know what you're trying to say,
which owns the IMAPA project. So Cadence, in effect, will own 20% of a mine that was valued $600 million by Anglo American back in 2012. Kieran Mazzari, the CEO, also bought a block of shares last week as well. The company's at a pivotal stage, and the CEO, chairman, Andrew Suckling, has said that this will be a company-changing event for Cadence Minerals, which currently trades at 3.9p on a market cap of 4.4 million. And this was also reiterated, one of the investee companies or the investment companies Cadence has invested in, MacArthur Minerals, reported strong progress in its feasibility study on the Lake Giles iron ore project, which is where they have an agreement with Glencore to an offtake agreement with Glencore to buy the iron ore that's produced from that mine. And again, the MacArthur executive chairman Cameron McCall said that coronavirus notwithstanding, the impact on most major commodities, iron ore prices has remained resilient and solid at around $90 a ton, up from $72 a ton in November last year. So Cadence, the time could be just about right for Cadence. If they get this agreement with the creditors, then it's transformational for the company. It has to be. 4.4 million market cap, they then own 20% of a project that was valued at $600 million in 2012.
Marvelous stuff. And just looking at it now, Ryanair stopped, TUI stopped, pretty much EasyJet shut down most of their operations. It's all grinding to a halt, isn't it? So it's crazy at the moment.
Yes,
and
really
on top of that, Roy Hudd has just died.
Oh, bless.
There's one thing, though. There's one thing. There's a little smile. This lady's a picture here. A lady who's gone out and bought lots of toilet roll. And I think he's a 3 or 4 year old son who just chucked them all in the bath. A bath full of water. Literally, the bath is just full of toilet rolls.
Somebody sent me a picture of Al Pacino in Scarface the other weekend with the one where he's sitting at the desk, and obviously in the film there's cocaine on the table, but in this case it's a pile of toilet rolls. So very apt for the very apt for the time.
Marvellous. I mean, I was going to say, if you're going to sort of buy something, you know, have a long term view. Don't go all in. You know, just think 3-6 months. I mean, 3 months, I think, hopefully, would be good if we come out of this in 3 months. I mean, you know, we're starting to see reductions in China and South Korea. So hopefully, if we follow that path, I know there's a lot of criticism over the government's action on this, but if we follow that path, hopefully we'll get up with them. But I wouldn't, you know, don't think you're going to get a bounce in the next week, 2 weeks, month even, because it's not going to happen. We're going to bounce along for a while, because there are still businesses shutting down, and we'll see the financial impact of that coming out a bit later when they actually release, you know, financial reports. So it'll be a while. It's a lag, isn't it, you know?
And also the market trades 6-9 months ahead, as we know. So, you know, it's taking a forward view on where we might be. And obviously, you know, the view now reflects September, October time, which is worth remembering. So it's a long, slow process, this. But, you know, for longer term, you know, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 years, if you're investing for that term, there are some great opportunities. But don't be worried if you buy now and it continues to fall, because the market's going to be all over the place for some time to come.
Yeah, in fact, just say hang on for a while, you know. I mean, just wait.
Always
got more time than you think in the markets. Right? There's always other opportunities. Like you mentioned all the stocks that got away before this happened. They were rallying very strongly. You said, oh, I'm never going to be able to buy that stock now. Well, you will be able to do it over the next few weeks and months and get a good deal. Get some bargains out there. Marvellous stuff. Cheers for that. I'll speak soon, fella. Speak to you next week.
Thanks, Josh. Speak to you next week.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They're at five. Red Energy, that's RED, down 20% at 0.85 pence. at 4 Tech Capital, up 40%, that's to 5.75 pence. At 3, Lloyds Banking Group, that's down 11% today. Wow, we talked about that today. At 2, Open Orphan, that is up a tiny smidge at 0.4%. There's very few green or rising companies around. The market, massive sell-off again. The speed of the sell-off is unprecedented, pretty much. And also, it was Open Orphan number 2. At TUI, down 31% today as they announced they're shutting down their operations. Wow, some of these big companies, especially the travel companies, taking a shellacking there. Okay, top 5 most liked RNSs. At 5, it's Firestone Diamonds, result of meeting. At 4, Tuple, 2 new major contract wins and market update. At 3, Ektek Group, collaboration framework agreement with Iwirigi. Open Orphan, publication of positive results in journal. And number 1, most liked RNS, was Bidstack Group. Bidstack and Codemasters, new gaming collaboration. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos appreciado.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.